Hello and welcome to another episode of The Advocacy Channel, a customer marketing podcast. I'm your host, Will Fraser, and this is our fifth episode. Today I'm thrilled to have John Ashley join us on the show. John has over 20 years of experience developing customer advocacy programs for large companies in the UK. And today we'll be chatting about how to get company buy-in for your customer advocacy program. Hey, John. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Hey, how you doing, Will?
I'm doing wonderful. It's another great day here on the West Coast, and I'm really excited to be talking to you all the way from the UK. I feel like we're in the space age here.
Definitely. Yeah, it's the power of being at home and talking over the internet, right?
Right. It's an amazing thing that's become so doable. So very glad to have you here today. As we jump into this, there's a question I wanted to start with, and it's a question that I think is both simple and amazingly complex, and one that sometimes people just gloss over. And so I just want to get, in your opinion, what is a customer advocacy program?
Well, that's a big question. Probably the simplest way to describe it is to think about where it's come from, where advocacy has kind of come from. And I'll be honest with you, advocacy kind of really started in the B2C market. So it's very much a consumer-driven kind of thing, whereby, grocers, shops, retail stores, they're all trying to garner loyalty with their customers to keep them coming back for more and more and more. And the way that they do that is through a number of different tactics, like two for one, all the different promotional activities they kind of launch. But on top of that, you've probably in the last, in the last 10 years, seen a massive uptake in loyalty cards or any kind of store cards or any type of points-based system where everything you buy, you get something back. And that's another way of trying to foster loyalty. Now, in the business-to-business world, it's slightly different because, you can't just suddenly start throwing, points, money and, things at business users. But what has happened is business users are starting to demand much more of an emotional engagement with the brand. And I'll be honest, that has kind of been created by the consumer world. And it's kind of then come into the business world. So advocacy in the business sense is loyalty, of course it is, but it's also about how do you foster relationships? How do you get those customers to talk about your business? How do you get those customers to advocate on your behalf? Because their worth is more than the sum of the original transaction. So if you think about, everything that you do as a brand loyalist, every time you talk to someone, every time you recommend a product, every time you review a product, you're actually acting on behalf of that organization as a walking advert. So, and they're not paying you to do that. So this is where loyalty programs have kind of evolved in the B2B space to become advocacy programs. And they're a lot deeper now than they ever used to be. And I think, if you think about new customer acquisition, there's always those slides that you see from businesses that say, new customer acquisition. And then you also see that slide that says, we get 80% of our business from 20% of our customers and we must keep them loyal. And we must look after them. But in practice, does that really happen? Are there many businesses out there that really kind of follow that? And I'll quite happily put my neck on the line and say, I don't think there are. I think there are companies who try, but I don't think there are companies who do it very, very well. And they're all still very much focused on net new customers. Get the new logo. And then they forget about their existing customer base. And I think advocacy programs are trying to correct that. And it's kind of come from the whole customer marketing world. It's come from account-based marketing world. Is kind of a hybrid of all those things, but it's become a discipline in its own right.
One of the things you said in there that really resonates with me is this idea of fostering relationships. I feel like a lot of brands kind of go with this idea of like close and then advocate. And they kind of miss this middle period, which is that a big chunk of your advocacy program and really your customer retention program really is around fostering that relationship. And so I'm glad you kind of touched on that point. Obviously with, you know, an end goal of we want to increase brand loyalty and we want to drive, you know, referrals, recommendations, advocacies for the brand. But I think that fostering relationship part can be very easily missed. It's kind of like assumed like, well, you bought from us, you must now love us. Now go tell people about us. And it's like, no. There's a big gap between the two, in my opinion.
Definitely. And, you know, no company or no business has the right to assume that a customer is going to advocate for you.
Right.
You know, that has to be earned. Okay. That has to be earned. And we always talk about, you know, some businesses I've worked for, up to the point of sale, the whole process is slick and it's really positive. And the customer, you know, is taken on a journey and they get to that point of sale and they buy the product and nothing happens. And then you kind of get that creeping of buyer's remorse starting to come into the conversation. Have I made the right decision? And this is where two things can happen. That customer, if you don't get to that customer and carry on that positive journey, they'll start to feel that they've just been used to close a deal. And, you know, there's a bit of animosity that starts to creep in and, you know, customers start to feel, does this company really value my business? You know, what's that? And then, you know, I'm not saying it just goes completely dark. There will be a point where that person will be contacted and then they'll start, you know, talking about how we're going to install or how we're going to, you know, bring this product to life for you. So that happens. But the sales piece is usually the focus. That's the focus all the way up to the point of sale.
Yeah.
Now, the next part you have to do is that customer is not going to be an advocate from day one. It's just not going to happen. It's now down to the business. It's down to every employee within that business to have this customer obsessed kind of thought that the journey starts today. The journey didn't start when they became a prospect. The actual real journey starts on the day they purchased the product. This is the important, this is the critical phase. Okay, we've landed them. Now we need to take them on a journey that's going to keep them loyal, that's going to foster that relationship, that's going to make them see they've made the right decision. And the whole point about advocacy is we can insert ourselves fairly early into that process because we're monitoring all of those type of new customers that we've, you know, that a business has landed. We've also then got visibility of them and we're watching their journey. And then what we will do, typically through a customer success team, if a business has a customer success team, and this is where advocacy plays a critical part to them, because the kind of relationship that you have with your customer success team is absolutely, you know, fundamental. You know, the two are joined at the hip. The next thing that will happen is when they start to deploy, and there'll be all sorts of challenges, you know, possibly through the deployment, when they come out the other side of that deployment and they start using the product, that's where customer success and customer advocacy starts playing a vital role. And that's the opportunity for us to start nurturing that customer, not to buy more things, not to take them on a cross-sell, upsell journey, but to nurture them around the company. You know, our ethics, our CSR, you know, what we do in the market, you know, what other customers we have, what other peers that they might know that already use the product. There are so many kind of insertion points, but each one of them is critical. And if you get that part right and the customer starts enjoying that journey, they'll then see the value of what they've bought, which is the start of the advocacy journey.
So, you know, you made a mention there, which I think is very true, which is that I think most organizations naturally lean towards acquisition, right? You know, we refer to it as the acquisition addiction. For whatever reason, whether it's, you know, shareholders or it's just a shiny thing to chase, acquisition is a thing that we see lots of companies focus on. And with that, you know, as much as we may be believers in advocacy programs, you know, one of the great questions out there is how do I get my acquisition addicted company to support and believe in advocacy? You know, how do I get that support I need to bring a program like this up and off the ground?
Yeah, that's a really good question. In actual fact, I've been asked that a number of times by quite a few different businesses actually, who have come to me and said, how do we do this? And there's a big company in the UK who I had a meeting with last week, and they just really wanted to understand, how they position, such a thing as advocacy, because someone's running around going, "We need an advocacy program. We need an advocacy program." And someone's going, "Well, what is an advocacy program?" And they're going, "I don't know. I don't know what an advocacy program is. I just know we need it." So, there's a lot of confusion around, what it actually is. And there's two kind of fundamental programs. First of all, don't confuse advocacy with just pure out and out selling. It's not that. And there's two things there. There's the indirect benefits from an advocacy program, but there's also the direct benefits from an advocacy program. And sometimes marketing gets a rough ride, because don't forget, advocacy sits in marketing. Although I would say it's a hybrid kind of responsibility. But how do you get that into your business? How do you convince someone that advocacy is the right direction to head in? If you've got a customer success team, you're already halfway there, right? That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you want to convince your business as an advocacy person like myself, you have to wear every single hat in that business, because you need to have, and I mentioned this earlier, a customer-obsessed culture. So everything, you need to say, whatever the customer does, they walk on water. They are the people. They have spent the money with us. They've invested in our company. And let's not be under any illusion. They could walk away. There's so much choice out there. There's so many, it's so easy to move, to chop and change. I mean, 20 years ago, if you bought a product, you'd probably go, "Look, I really don't like it, but we've got no choice. We've got to stick with it, regardless of whether I like this company or not." But today, that's very different. You can change instantly if you really want to, if you've got the desire to. And this is the challenge that is presented to marketing. And advocacy programs, we have to wear every single hat within the business. We have to be salespeople, marketing people, customer success, business development reps. We have to be, HR, we have to wear all these different hats. And the reason being is because the business case directly impacts every single one of those people. Because, and I mentioned HR, and someone will be going, "HR, what are you talking about?" HR is really important, because when they're recruiting new people into your business, they need to say, "We're a customer-obsessed organization. That's our culture." At the point of, "I'm hiring someone," yet customers are absolutely the epitome of everything we do. That's why it's important for HR.
And when you're trying to make that argument to each of these basically, different departments or that business case that touches all of them, do you have experience as kind of, where are you most likely to find your allies and what kind of roles you'll need to bring on board with getting this support?
Yeah, I mean, marketing is definitely kind of your primary. They're going to be your main sponsor, because we typically find that advocacy sits in marketing, right? It's almost like someone's taken the advocacy piece out of the marketing mix and said, "Right, that's now going to be a thing on its own." So of course they're your allies, okay? And the reason being is because what you end up doing in advocacy is very much marketing driven. So, if we just park the relationship piece aside, and we go back and focus on that indirect and direct kind of piece, what can I get directly, from a advocacy program? And what I can get directly from an advocacy program is revenue protection. I can get new leads. I can get cross-sell and upsell opportunities out of my advocacy program, okay? So there's direct, tangible things that you can get. The indirect stuff, and the stuff that is a little bit more difficult to measure, but is still possible, is sentiment, is voice, is market share, is, what do people think about my brand? Where do I sit in terms of category leadership, for example? Those are things you can influence, but are quite difficult to measure. It's quite difficult to actually see, unless, of course, you're using something like an NPS scale, and you can see that your NPS is going up and that your advocates indirectly are helping that score go up at the same time. So there's lots of different ways that you can do it, but that indirect and direct model. So when you're talking to sales, they're interested in the direct piece. When you're talking to marketing, they're interested in the direct and indirect. When you're talking to customer success, they're talking, you know, they want to know a bit of both. If you're talking to your CEO and your top level C guys, they want to know what impact you're going to be delivering, right? That's the first question they're going to ask. What impact is this program going to deliver? And you can measure that impact, because don't forget, advocacy is voice of the customer content. So case studies or success stories, videos, blogs, you know, all of that stuff where you actually put a customer front and center, that's measurable. Mm-hmm. Because that type of content gets used and gets consumed. And it was interesting, I saw a stat from Gartner to say that about 79% of buyers will consume three pieces of advocacy-led content before they make their decision. And don't forget, that can be anything. That could be a review, it can be a case study, it can be a blog, it can be a podcast, you know, it can be a number of different things. But it was just interesting to see that type of research you wouldn't have seen 5 years ago, because advocacy has become a kind of a new standard bearer.
Mm-hmm. Now you're kind of talking about these benchmarks or these kind of impact areas. If you're in a company that, say, isn't measuring NPS, you know, would you suggest that someone basically first tries to get that benchmark measure in place so that they can take an argument that, hey, this NPS needs to improve, or any suggestions around that?
Yeah, I think a couple of organizations that I've worked with and had experience of, you know, they might not use the NPS scale. They might use something like quarterly business reviews, mm-hmm. where they're scoring the customer based on how they're feeling, you know, and that is another kind of benchmark that they would use. Now, look, you know, NPS is simple. It just says, would you recommend us to someone else?
Yeah.
Yes or no?
Yeah.
it's not difficult. In the most basics, that's what you're asking. And if the customer says, no, I wouldn't, then you've got a problem.
Right.
And you've got to find out why. Okay. So it's not absolutely necessary, because, you know, every company will have some form of sentiment measurement somewhere. You've just got to identify what that is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the recommendation is to always go for something where you are surveying your customers on a regular basis. Now, the great thing about an advocacy program is you can do that.
Right.
So, you know, if you have an advocacy program in, or you put one into your business, they can take responsibility for that measurement. So the great thing there is you're starting at ground zero. So there's only one way it could possibly go. So yeah, if you've got an existing kind of scoring mechanism, then, you know, it's a bit more difficult, because, you know, if you've got a 5, you can't really move the needle. You can only just maintain that and make sure it doesn't go down. And the last thing you want to do is see that go down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all the other things you can do around that. So, you know, if you've got customers scoring 5, I'd be chasing those customers down and asking them to do lots and lots of different acts of advocacy for me, because I'd want to use their voice in the market.
Mm.
I mean, they're gold dust, aren't they?
Right.
If someone comes to me and says, yeah, I score you a 5, I love you, I would never buy anything else ever. I'd be like, right. You know, what can we do for you? And that's another part of the advocacy world. It's give and give. It's not give, take, or take. It's a relationship, right? So you have to base it around mutual kind of satisfaction, if you like. So the customer feels, you know, they're getting something from it. And I'm not saying, you know, we never want to go down kind of that world, you know, where I think it was Forrester who said something along the lines of, you know, is it not pay to play? I can't remember exactly what it was. But what they were saying was, you know, in the whole world of loyalty, there's this thing saying where you build a winning kind of relationship with your customers. It's always about shower them with gifts, shower them with stuff. And, you know, customers don't want that. You know, that's not what they want. They're not expecting you to turn up with a bunch of flowers every day. You know, what they want is they want a product that works, does the job. They have a good relationship, an honest and transparent relationship.
Sure.
That if they have a problem, they can come and say, look, I've got a problem, need to sort this out. And then, you know, we react. And sometimes what you tend to find in advocacy is we sometimes end up being the owner of that problem.
Mm.
Because if we're forming relationships with these customers will see us as an extension of our company. Of course we are. And they'll ask us tough questions. Yeah. They'll come to us and say, John, I've got a problem. What do I do? Who do I go to? I need this problem sorting out. What I need to do is own that problem then. Because the problems come to, you know, the customers come to me and says, John, here's a problem, go sort it. And I'm like, okay, I don't really know where to go or what to do, but I will help you. So yeah. I take ownership of that and solve it. And if you can do that, you've almost got a customer for life.
Right, right. Yeah, we used to talk about it when I was still a software engineer, which is a customer that experiences a bug that you fix in a day may love you for life, but a customer that experiences no bugs actually may not see the value in the work you do. and there's this, sometimes there's a value. If you can respond quickly and solve a problem, it can be a huge value in that.
Yeah, that's very true.
For companies that you know, someone has got buy-in, they've got, you know, support from the executive team, whoever they may need to launch this advocacy program, you know, any kind of tips for someone who's just starting out or who's kind of early in their advocacy program journey?
Yeah, I'd firstly say under promise, over deliver. Famous words that everyone says. Look, I mean, you can sometimes want to over-egg your advocacy program because you're so excited, you want to get it launched, you can see the benefits, you can see everything that you want to achieve. But sometimes you just got to rein that enthusiasm in a little bit just to keep it, you know, level, and, you know, don't set your program up to fail. You know, because the last thing you want is to go around saying, yeah, we're going to be the number one marketing program in this company, and you haven't even launched, right? Yeah. You haven't got any benchmarks, you haven't got any metrics, you haven't decided what you're actually going to do. My advice is you just grow, okay? Mm. Relationships don't happen on day one. They take time to foster and nurture. It's the same with your advocacy program. It takes time to foster and nurture. You know, if you think you're going to have, you know, 5,000 customers on day one all going out and doing stuff for you in your advocacy program, you're going to be disheartened and, you know, not very happy. It doesn't work like that. You know, customers, when they come in, they, you know, particularly if you're using a tool, an online platform,
sure.
You know, they'll come in, they'll have a look around, they'll see what's available for them to do, they'll go and do some stuff, you know, but it's, you're building a community. And I think that's the other critical part of this. You are building a community. And what you're doing with this community is you're introducing other people into this community. So your customers are going to talk to each other, right? Some companies have gone, we can't have that. Yeah. Customers talking to each other, what's all that about? And you kind of go, why not? You know, they're the same people at the end of the day. That you know, just because, and it's like, yeah, but what if they start dissing our product and, you know, dissing our company? And it's like, well, I think you've got a deeper problem then, really. You know, if you think that of your customers, you know, I think there's something a little bit more under the covers here that we should be talking about. You know, your advocacy program is being designed to build a community of customers who can talk to each other and can interact with each other and can see who they are. You know, if you think that they're going to start doing that, then I think we've got a bigger problem. Maybe advocacy isn't quite right for you yet.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's often the case with a lot of those kind of fears, like you said, is like, this probably isn't a problem of the advocacy program or whatever other initiative. This is a bigger company problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And you mentioned in there kind of, you know, it takes time. And I know that these kind of timelines are always hard to pin down. But if I was going to, you know, my executive and saying, hey, I really want to run this advocacy program, how long of a window am I asking for to make sure that I can show some efficacy of the program, in your opinion?
I think where I've put advocacy programs in, I've kind of, well, when I say you have to think about what your end game is, right? An advocacy program doesn't have an end. Right. It's always on. You know, once you switch it on, it's incredibly difficult then to switch it off, okay? Especially if you've got customers who are in there enjoying the benefits of being, you know, enjoying a new status, enjoying new experiences and all those wonderful things. I think when you're thinking about timescales, it's safe to assume your first year is going to be building, experimenting, testing things out, seeing how customers react, building the intelligence around your customer base, you'll start to see a propensity of what they like, what they don't like. You'll start to see things that work and don't work.
Mm-hmm.
And really, after a year, you'll be heading for maturity, a bit more maturity in your program. I would say probably it's a 3-year journey to get to any semblance of a program that's really starting to, you know, generate serious results. And I think that, you know, I would never say to anyone, yeah, after 3 months, your program's going to be humming. It's going to be on fire. It's going to be, you know, doing things that you never could do before. It's not, you know, that would be very wrong of me to set that expectation. And I wouldn't want anyone else to fall into that kind of pitfall. It's going to take a year to get that program running how you want that program to run. It's going to take a second year to mature. And it's going to take probably a third year for you to safely say it is making a difference. You aren't going to get, look, you're going to get things from day one that you're going to go, yay, look at this. Look what this customer's done for me already. They've left a review. Yay. But to really kind of, you know, there's nothing worse than joining a community and you're the only one in there.
Right.
Someone's got to be the first, right? Someone's got to be the first. So think about it from, I always say, think about it from your perspective, right? You've been invited to join this program. You go in, you have a look around, you go, oh, I'm not too sure. I think, you know, I'll come back another day. It's up to the advocacy program manager to keep nurturing, to keep communicating, to keep bringing them back, to put things into the program that are desirable, that people want to do. You're not going to know on day one, the end of month one, the end of quarter one, what works and what doesn't. It's just not going to happen.
You see, and I'm very happy that you're saying this. You know, lots of people we have spoken to, I think are operating on timelines where maybe they haven't got enough support to get to year one or year two. And they're in a place where they're supposed to basically, with less resources than they need, produce massive results in 3 months to prove that, you know, with the right resources, it could also produce the same results or something to that effect. And so it's a very real challenge to see. And I like the other thing you said in there, which is really important, I think, which is, you know, you don't, it's not, you know, build it and they will come. It's not, we put up the program and now everyone's showing up and it's amazing. It is, like you said, it's a continual remarketing effort. How do we tell people what's going on? How do we give them new reasons to come back? How do we introduce this program many times to people so that they finally feel comfortable to come participate? I think we've seen it here at Sasquatch. We've seen it where a lot of people will launch an initiative and basically they expect results on day one. And sometimes, to be fair, they do get them. But on day one, especially in a B2B environment, is a tall order. And then, you know, you don't have that continual marketing effort. You know, you need that support from the marketing team to continually talk to potential advocates, potential participants to keep coming back.
Yeah. And I think that you're absolutely spot on. And I think, you know, I think the way I look at it is, if you were absolutely laser focused on just one thing within your advocacy program, potentially you could get some results, you know, pretty swiftly, but you would have to be 100% laser focused. And the challenge you have therein is that your program then becomes that one hit wonder.
Mm.
You know, everyone just thinks your program is about doing that one thing. For example, driving reviews. Mm-hmm. Everyone thinks it's the review program, you know, right. And that's the danger. Because then all of a sudden people just become fixated on that one thing. And advocacy programs don't just cover that one thing. They cover a multitude of different opportunities. And you've got to remember you're doing this for the customer. And the reason I think a lot of companies want to invest in a fully kind of fledged, all-encompassing advocacy program is because they may have spotted advocates who they currently have, who are normally in the top pocket of the salesperson, because
mm-hmm.
that's what salespeople do. Sorry, salespeople out there. But coming from a sales background, I know because I used to do it. If I had an advocate customer, I'd keep them to myself. I wouldn't want anyone else using them because they're helping me close business, right? So why would I give Will my customer and say, yeah, Will, of course you can use my customer. Go for it. The other problem that you have there is that customer could eventually be overused and the goodwill will dry up, the goodwill will go. And then you have an alienated customer who is a lot harder to bring back because you'll feel really uncomfortable asking them to do anything ever again. And if they were a really good advocate for you, you've just blown that opportunity to do anything more with them in the future. So when that really big advocacy ask comes up that you think, oh my goodness me, that customer would have been absolutely the right customer to ask or to put in front of this audience, for example, you've lost the goodwill. You've lost that customer. You know, they've just become a user. So advocacy can go one of two ways. And I think that's why a lot of businesses today are starting to say, do you know what, we need someone to oversee this, to make sure that when we're asking advocates to do things, it's on their terms. It's not on our terms, it's on their terms. Right. So it becomes a lot more they're in control, but you're spoon-feeding them the things that you would like them to do. So you're in control of the asks and the program. Your customers are in control of what they want to do. But, you know, influence, you know, communication, you know, getting those customers to do these things is down to the advocacy team. But it's also a responsibility for everyone else in the organization. And this is something else as well, something very interesting. Advocacy doesn't stop with the advocacy team.
Right.
It's a company initiative. It has to be a company initiative. You have to have everyone in the business thinking the same thing. Because otherwise, if you just think, oh yeah, the advocacy team will do that, the program will burn out because you've got no other support. Everyone else is just retrenched to what they would normally do. And I think, you know, that's another kind of common pitfall.
Mm-hmm. No, that makes sense. And absolutely. I mean, you got to have those reps out there talking to people. You've got to have those success teams, you know, talking to people, and everyone aligned. Makes a ton of sense there.
Yeah, and also it can be a competitive differentiator. Mm. You know, let's not forget that. You know, an advocacy program, you know, if you put it up as a kind of a desirable club, if you like, where you know, I mean, how many times have you walked past, you know, a club that's, you know, music and lights and things going on, and you're like, can I go in? It's like, no, you can't. You have to be a member. Oh,
yeah.
Well, how do I become a member? Well, it's not that easy. You know, you're going to have to jump through hoops of fire, and you're going to have to do this, that, and the other, and you have to be a loyal customer of this brand. Right. Okay. So, you know, create desire. You know, everyone hates being on the outside. Everyone loves being on the inside and thinking, you know, they're getting special treatment, which is great. Everyone does. So, of course, you know, that exclusivity can be a competitive differentiator for you. You know, to say, when you join, there is an opportunity that you'll be asked to join our VIP club. Oh, really? You know, and I know it sounds really cheesy. I know it sounds really, really kind of, you know, what's the word? It kind of, I don't want to devalue advocacy programs, but let's get down into the nitty gritty. That's what it is, you know, and you can call it that. You can say it's a club, and you can say it's for our best customers, you know, and all of a sudden these new customers are thinking, well, I want some of that, you know.
I think it was Marketo that did it, where basically if you reached a certain level, I believe it was in their training, but it could have been in one of their other programs, you received a pair of like Marketo branded sneakers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people would, you know, these were coveted items. And so you'd go to like Marketo conferences or shows, and people are like proudly wearing their, I think they were, their Chucks, they're like the kicks. And so you're like, this is exactly that. We all love to be part of a club. And even when that club is connecting us to a company, you know, as long as that we identify with the cause of that company, we do for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. I mean, if someone I know is part of a club, I want to know everything there is to know about it and why I can't be a member. You know, it might not be right for me, but I still want to be a member.
Exactly. I just want to take a bit of a detour for a second. You know, we've learned a lot here about advocacy programs, but for people who are trying themselves to get into advocacy marketing, I'd love to just kind of learn a little bit about your journey into advocacy marketing, mm-hmm. as well as kind of any tips you might have for someone who's looking to enter this space.
Yeah, I think for me, I mean, I've seen so many wonderful people who are now in customer advocacy, and I'm absolutely thrilled to see it become such a major part of businesses' thinking, which is great for us, you know, great for anyone, you know, who is in advocacy marketing, because it just means that everything we've been saying for the last however many years has actually been right, you know. Yeah. So, you know, if I was sat here going, oh no, this advocacy thing is a disaster, you know, then, and I need to change business direction, I need to go into something else, I'm going to go and, you know, do something different with my life. But it hasn't. It's gone the opposite way. I mean, I'm just seeing so many opportunities within advocacy marketing. It's just amazing to see. And I think, you know, if you're looking for traits, you know, I think if you're a little bit eccentric, a little bit fun, you've got a background in sales, you know, background in marketing, you know, I've taken on people who've had absolutely no experience within advocacy, such, so to speak, but what they have done is they've shown me a flair, enthusiasm. They've said, oh, I love customers. Customers are the best. You know, I just love everything about customers. If they say that, I'm like, sold. Sold. You're in, you know. To run an advocacy program, you have to think like your customers. You have to think like just people. You know, this is a people person role. This is where you are building relationships at a different level. You are being, you know, forget that they're a CTO or a CIO or a CEO. They're just normal people at the end of the day, right? That's what they are. And you treat them with respect and you treat them in a friendly way and they will really enjoy the relationship. They'll enjoy the interaction. And I've still got, you know, some customers from previous companies who I still talk to on a regular basis that were advocates in my previous programs. And I still talk to them and they still say, hey, John, how's it going? How are you doing? And I'm like, yeah, it's great. It's going really, really well. Where are you now? You know, that's the next question. And I still tell them I'm still, you know, in advocacy. I'm still running and building programs and helping businesses realize the value of advocacy. So I don't think there is a, yes, this person is an advocate marketer. I don't think that that's how it kind of works in our world. I think it's a combination of so many different traits and you just see it in someone. You just see that they get excited about, you know, customers and how can I look after them? How can I provide a service? How can I be better for them? And that's what really excites them. And if they've got that kind of personality, they're advocate marketers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that kind of view of it, right? That customer obsessed. I think what you said there was, you know, fun, a little bit eccentric. You know, these are great traits to be looking for. I guess I've only got one last question for you here, but I think it's one that could really help a lot of people, which is, you know, when you started in advocacy marketing, what is the one piece of advice you wish you had? You know, wish you had someone had given you when you were just kind of starting your first advocacy program.
Oh, goodness me. That is a tough question because I think when I first started on my journey, I had people kind of going very glossy-eyed. You know, when I talk to them about advocacy, they kind of look at me and go, what? What are you talking about? You want to do what? Because everyone was kind of doing advocacy, but everyone was doing it in isolation. Everyone was doing pockets of it. Everyone was doing bits of it. There was never kind of a formalized strategy. There was not a formalized program, you know, by saying, we're going to have these customers in one place and we're going to look after them and we're going to nurture them and we're going to do, rather than Joe over there and Dave over there who's doing a bit with that customer and, you know, Debbie's doing a bit with that customer over there. Let's bring it together. Let's actually bring it together. Let's pull these customers, pull our resources and start looking to see how we build better relationships with them. And I think the one piece of advice I'd probably give every advocate marketer who is starting this journey is just be focused on what the program is there to deliver. It's not just one thing. And I think it's really difficult to try and communicate that to people who, you know, think that advocacy marketing is case studies.
Right.
That's it. That's all they think it is, right? It's about how do you open their eyes up to all of the other possibilities that you could get, but also how you, those customers will react to you in this world of advocacy, you know. And we don't say to customers, you're in an advocacy program. You know, we don't say that because it's like, what? You know, you'll end up explaining to the customer what it's all about. I'm going to say disguise. That's the wrong word to use. I say you're just going to veil it. Okay, you're just going to put a thin veil over the top of it to say, it's our advocacy program, but for customers, it's this.
Right.
You know, at Sage, it was Sage Champions.
Mm-hmm.
At another company, it's VIP. You know, at another company, it will be you are our top customers, you know, whatever they want to call it. But it's about making sure that those customers know they are the best of the best. They're the cream of the crop and that you want to make them feel special.
I think that is a great way to end our conversation right there. Making sure that we make those customers feel special and make them feel like you said the cream of the crop. Because at the end of the day, we're all looking to be special, and we're all looking to feel like we've made some real relationships. So I love it. Well, John, it's been an amazing conversation. I know I've learned a lot and enjoyed it. I'm sure our listeners have as well. Before we go, is there anywhere that our listeners could find you if they wanted to connect or kind of follow up?
I'd say probably the easiest place is LinkedIn. So I'm John, J-O-N, and then Ashley, A-S-H-L-E-Y. I believe there's one other John Ashley on LinkedIn, bizarrely. I didn't think there would be. I think he plays the guitar. I can't play the guitar, so that's not me.
I like that. John Ashley on LinkedIn that doesn't play the guitar.
Correct.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much again, John. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks, Will.
Thank you for tuning into the Advocacy Channel. We're taking a break for the holidays, so this is our last episode for the year. But please come back and join us again in 2022 as we uncover more top insights and strategies from industry experts like John. If you like what you've heard and would like to support the Advocacy Channel, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and hit the follow or subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about customer marketing, head over to our blog or follow us on LinkedIn. Both links are in this episode's description. And that wraps up another great episode and a first year of the Advocacy Channel. We'll see you real soon.